Welcome to Citizens Climate Radio. In this show, we highlight people's stories, we celebrate your successes, and together we share strategies for talking about climate change. I'm your host, Peterson Toscano. Welcome to episode 62 of Citizens Climate Radio, a project of Citizens Climate Education. This episode is airing on Friday, July 30th, 2021. In today's show, you will hear a good news report about a Latino Republican who is taking climate change seriously. Groups like Citizens Climate Lobby are listening. In the Art House, we hear the premiere of a radio drama based on a children's story by Ellie Sparks. But first, historian Geraldo Cadava joins us to talk about his book, The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Identity.
I am an associate professor of history and Latina and Latino studies at Northwestern University. I'm also the author of The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity from Nixon to Trump.
And he keeps getting asked the same question over and over again.
How could it be that any Latino would vote for a Republican, let alone a Republican like Donald Trump, who seems to have staked much of his first administration, well, his only administration, on anti-immigrant policy and loud anti-immigrant rhetoric. And so I think that just doesn't make a lot of sense. And even beyond just being confusing, I think it's actually galling to a lot of people, just kind of unimaginable. It's almost like a moral question. Someone who separated families and detained children, how could it be?
While he understands why many are baffled by movements like Latinos for Trump, Geraldo Cadava wants to shift the discourse.
I would like to start these conversations from the position that all Latinos, including Republicans, have serious and deeply held political beliefs, and we shouldn't just take them for granted as either natural Democrats or natural Republicans, as members of both parties have tried to do for a long period of time.
Beyond political beliefs and voting patterns, Geraldo Cadava points out how different terms and identities are expressed by Latinos, Hispanics, and Latinx people in the USA.
The history of how Hispanics or Latinos have identified is in and of itself a very interesting and long history. And so, you know, just to be brief, you know, in the mid 20th century, you might see terms like Spanish speaking Americans or Americans of Spanish descent or something like that. You know, in the 60s and 70s, you might see Chicanos or Boricua. Those are terms that apply in particular to the kind of civil rights activists of Mexican-American or Puerto Rican descent. A lot of Latinos still continue to identify by their national origin. So like Mexicano or Venezolano for Venezuelans or Cubano for Cuban, all of those things. And so, you know, I think it's a long and complicated history. I use the term in my book Hispanic primarily because that is the term that Latino conservatives have preferred for a long period of time. I mean, since the beginning of their movement in the mid 20th century, in the 1960s, 1970s, some of their first organizations were called Hispanic organizations. I mean, you've seen a migration to the term Latino. So like the Trump campaign, their Latino campaign was the Latinos for Trump. And so I think conservatives are comfortable with both Hispanic and Latino. It's not that those terms are synonymous. I think they ring differently for different people, but I think you can use them interchangeably. So I think that's how they get used by Republicans and conservatives in a political sense. I mean, I myself am not too dogmatic about these labels. I think that people can choose for themselves what labels they use to describe themselves. And I myself am likely to use many different labels depending on the context. So Mexican-American, Panameño for Panamanian, and Filipino or Latino or Hispanic, I don't feel particularly strongly about it. I think that Latinx is a term that, you know, is one among many that Latinos use today to describe themselves. It's embraced more by youth. It's embraced more by gender nonconforming youth because the X is supposed to replace the O or the A, and Spanish is a kind of gendered language. So gender neutral or non-conforming genders have embraced Latinx to be their umbrella term. But I think, you know, it will be one term among many that Latinos use.
In his book, The Hispanic Republican, Geraldo Cadava outlines the history of ways Republicans successfully reached out to Hispanics.
In some ways, the values were first articulated by the Hispanics working for Ronald Reagan in 1980 when he ran his campaign, his first successful campaign for president. He and his Hispanic advisors kind of sat down to articulate what were the core values or characteristics of the Hispanic Republican. And they pointed to things like family values and traditional ideas about marriage and a work ethic and a support for free enterprise, economic policies, and also anti-communism and anti-socialism. And so in a lot of ways, I think that those core values of the Hispanic Republican have remained remarkably consistent, and they were the ones highlighted by the Latinos for Trump campaign as well. So in some ways, the Trump campaign's Latinos for Trump campaign was the most traditional and predictable aspect of an otherwise kind of chaotic campaign, because they were using the same playbook for recruiting Latinos. Latinos today continue to name a lot of issues they care about, even above the issue of immigration, which has long been presumed to be the main issue that motivates Latinos. So Latinos will still name things like the economy or healthcare or, you know, many other things, the economy, healthcare, education, as issues they care about even more than immigration. And I think it's important to note that on those positions, there are conservative policies that they've gravitated towards. You know, the Trump campaign really foregrounded their economic successes and the tax cuts, the financial deregulations, the fact that Latinos had lower rates of poverty than ever before, or higher rates of homeownership and family median incomes. You know, I say that not to, again, not to just highlight Trump's successes, but this has been the Republican Party's success among Latinos for a long period of time.
So who are these Latinos voting Republican? Who are Republicans targeting? Courting small business owners has been a consistent strategy with mixed results.
You know, they're a really, really diverse lot. And Latino small business owner can mean anything from, you know, a mom and pop shop with zero or one or two employees to something like Chef Jose Andres's company that employs thousands of workers. So, you know, I think that those very small businesses that, you know, like a bodega in New York or Jose Andres, who owns many restaurants, I think they can have very different interests. So I think it's complicated to talk about Latino small business owners as a single block. But nevertheless, yeah, I think Trump, by appealing to Latinos based on his tax cuts and deregulations and making small business loans easier to procure, I think that is certainly how the Trump campaign saw things.
And what about class? Was the divide between pro-Trump and pro-Biden about class? Is it that wealthier Latinos are attracted to the business-friendly platform Republicans construct each election cycle?
Yeah, so because Latino small business owners and property owners, and, you know, because the Trump campaign saw them as some of its prime targets when it came to recruiting Latinos, I think there is this assumption that wealthier Latinos have been more inclined to support Trump than those who are less wealthy. And, you know, that is certainly borne out by the numbers. I mean, there have been plenty of studies that found that if Latinos earn above $75,000 per year or $100,000 per year, they are more likely to support Republican candidates. I think this year, the statistic was that 30% of Trump's Latino support came from Latinos earning less than $100,000 a year, whereas 70% of Trump's Latino support came from Latinos earning more than $100,000 per year. So that does tend to correlate with the idea that it's wealthier Latinos who support conservatives. But I will note that even the 30% of Latinos who earn below $100,000 per year, that is about the national average that Trump won among Latinos. So I don't know how significant that number is. And I think, you know, it's also important to consider something Latino Republicans feel a lot of confidence about right now, which is this idea that their party is poised to become the party for working class non-white Americans. I have a hard time at least assuming that that's true, but it's an idea. And I think that idea is based on the fact that Trump found greater success in 2020 than he did in 2016 among working class Latinos. And so I think that that has given many Latino Republicans confidence that their party is going to become a party that represents working class Latinos as well. So I think on both of these counts that you're asking about, both of these topics, business owners and class, I mean, I think that, yes, it's long been assumed that wealthier Latinos skew more conservative than working class Latinos. But I think that there are reasons to at least complicate that idea or question a little bit in ways that we won't necessarily know the answer to until 2022, 2024, or later.
And what about climate change? Geraldo Cadava explained that while tracking opinions around climate change and Hispanic Republicans is not the focus of his book, he was willing to share his thoughts and observations.
Latinos are not unique in the sense that youth, younger people, care about the climate much more than older Americans. That is certainly true among Latino youth. I mean, the climate is an issue that they will name among their top concerns. But I think a lot of Latinos also live in areas affected by climate change in Florida and California and elsewhere. And I think that they've, you know, many have worked in agriculture or have had livelihoods that depend on agriculture. And of course, climate change affects agriculture perhaps more than other industries. And I also think that climate refugees are an important topic of conversation and climate refuge. And we know that a lot of Latin American sending countries in Central America, Mexico, elsewhere have been really devastated by climate change and sent a lot of Latin American migrants moving toward the United States. So I think the climate, you know, there's a lot of reasons that Latinos care about it. In terms of what Hispanic Republicans have told me, I guess I can say a couple of things. I think I would tell you first, I guess, about the first Hispanic Secretary of the Interior, a guy named Manuel Luján, who was a Mexican-American from New Mexico. I think the Republican position long has been, and this is certainly his position, has been, you know, a balanced approach to climate change and conservation. So coming from New Mexico, what that meant was protecting federal lands and conserving the environment at the same time that you open up land for economic development, you know, quote unquote, responsibly. And so a balanced approach between economic development and conservation, I think, was for a long time the pretty kind of mainstream Republican response to issues of the environment. I was recently talking also with a guy named Daniel Garza, who's the head of the Libre Initiative, a kind of free enterprise grassroots organization funded by the Koch brothers. And we were talking about Latino Republicans, and his point really had to do with how questions are framed more than anything else, and how, from his perspective, Democratic-leaning think tanks or polling organizations ask questions in a way that frames the issues more to their liking, but not necessarily in a neutral way. So the example he used, though, was about climate. And what he said was that, sure, you know, if you ask any Latino, do they care about the environment? And do you want to protect the environment? They're all going to say yes. I mean, everyone cares about the environment. Everyone wants to protect the environment. But then he went on to say, but if you ask a Latino, are you willing to protect the environment if it comes at a cost of trillions of dollars, then the response is going to be much more mixed. To me, that kind of summed up how Latino Republicans feel about this issue, because, yeah, sure, they want to protect the environment, but we've long known that it's been like a talking point of Republicans for the past two or three decades that protecting the environment necessarily comes at a cost to workers and economic growth. And I think that many have tried to complicate that idea, but it's been a pretty persistent idea held by Latinos and all Republicans. You know, in general, I think that this is one of the ideas that we always need to keep at the front of our mind when it comes to thinking about partisan politics, is that parties are not static. They do change. They do respond to events on the ground, and they respond to the successes and failures of previous election cycles. So I would expect, you know, the conservative position to evolve on this as well.
So going back to the question he's always asked, how could any Latino vote for Donald Trump?
Both parties have tried to paint Latinos as either natural Republicans or natural Democrats. And I just don't think that that's how Latino partisan identity or anyone's partisan identity forms. I think partisan identity has more to do with history and conversations with your family and your community. And so it's a product of history. It evolves over time rather than being something that we are naturally from birth. That's why I wanted to write The Hispanic Republican, and I do hope that going forward, and one lesson of this election might be that we need to hear and listen to all Latinos and take seriously what their political beliefs are, so we're not surprised by how they vote next time.
The book is The Hispanic Republican, The Shaping of an American Political Identity, From Nixon to Trump. It is written by Geraldo Cadava, and it's available in print, digitally on Kindle, and as an audiobook through Audible. Now it is time for the Art House. Over 10 years ago, a woman in Virginia was struggling to make sense of climate change. Ellie Sparks told me the story about how that summer in Virginia, it was insanely hot. She remembers being in the community pool, and when she popped her head out of the water evaporated so quickly she felt downright cold. She also remembers walking with coworkers to the cafeteria and thinking, why in the world are none of these people alarmed about climate change? She was really struggling, so she wrote a story for herself. Tell Me a Story is a conversation between a parent and a child, a story within a story. Ellie, who is now Citizens Climate Lobby's Director of Field Development, has shared the story with friends, fellow climate advocates, and at public gatherings. She gave me permission to turn the story into a short radio play. Tell Me a Story is performed by Zeke and Anna Loomis Weber.
Tell me a story, Mama.
Sure. Which one?
The story about the time Earth nearly lost her people.
Okay, I'll tell you that one. That's a good story. A long time ago, Earth was filled with people, from north to south and east to west. They had different religions, or none at all. They looked alike, or not at all. Mostly, they got along and lived with love. However, some of the people were afraid.
Afraid of what, Mama?
Afraid of other people. Afraid of not having enough. Afraid of change. Afraid to lose. The people who were afraid of others stuck their fingers in their ears and hummed so they couldn't hear other people talking to them. The people who were afraid of not having enough took more than they needed. They took more trees than they needed. They took more fish than they needed. They took more land than they needed. They also took things from deep in the earth. Things that should have stayed in the earth.
What did they take from deep inside the earth, Mama?
Back in the old days, so long ago, people took coal, oil, and natural gas from inside the earth. They burned these up to make things move, to build things, and to power things. They took many things. However, the biggest problem was the fossil fuels. Although it was powerful energy, it came at a heavy price. What happens when you burn something, darling?
Things get hot.
That's right. Burning those things that came from deep inside the earth made the world hotter. It also made it dirty and bad for breathing. They didn't notice at first. Earth is so big, and the people weren't burning much. But over time, they burned more, and Earth grew hot. The scientists noticed. They shared their alarm with the leaders and the people. A hot Earth would mean trouble. Now, remember those people with their fingers in their ears? The people who took more than they needed because they were afraid?
Yes, Mama.
It was so hard for those people to listen to the scientists. Their arms were wrapped tightly around their stuff. They had jammed their fingers in their ears. They were humming loudly, too loudly sometimes, even for other people to hear the scientists, or listen to ideas about how to change. They were also scared to change. Like you were scared to go to the new school, remember?
Yeah, but then I made new friends, and I like how colorful Miss Monica makes the classroom.
These people were scared and didn't want to move to something new. Unfortunately, they burned coal, oil, and natural gas more furiously. Earth changed. Trees caught fire and whole forests burned up. Rivers dried up. Valleys and lowlands flooded. Seawater rose up. Whole continents changed, many islands vanished, and fresh water turned salty. As oceans warmed, fish died. As air warmed, plants died. Without plants to eat, many animals and people died. It was a scary time, especially for those willing to look at the problem straight in the face. Finally, the day came when those who hoarded and hummed with their fingers in their ears let their guard down and realized an ancient truth, one shared by all of the religions and those with none. Do you know what that truth is, darling?
We are all connected.
That's right. We are connected. People, animals, earth, trees, water, rain, oceans.
Mama?
Yes, sweetheart?
Mama, the people who took more fish and trees than they needed. Tell me again, what did they finally do?
They let down their guard and surrendered to love. They worked with the others. Within 20 years, people stopped burning fuel and started harvesting other energy. 20 years is a long time. In 20 years, you may be a parent yourself. In 20 years, I may even be a grandparent. It was hard to stay focused for 20 years. Different leaders came and went, but the people knew what they wanted, and they kept pressure on the leaders to lead. Your great-grandmother was one of those people who spoke to the leaders. She knew what she wanted, and she let them know, year after year. She was kind, respectful, and determined. She was loud when she needed to be. She was also gently persistent. She had all of the qualities which Papa and I want you to have. That's why we gave her name to you.
I know, Mama. I wish I could have met her.
Me too. It will take a long time for Earth to heal from the damage done by so much dirty energy. You and I will be long gone. Many generations will pass before things are back in balance again. But by keeping the switch from burning energy to harvesting it, we've given Earth a chance to keep her people. It's time for bed, my little flower.
Good night, Mama.
Good night.
If you have an idea for the Art House, feel free to contact me, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. Now it is time for some good news.
My name is Hunter Thomas. I'm a conservative. I work as a conservative outreach fellow for CCL, and I'm a Latino. I think a good piece of news right now is CCL is always looking to branch out and see where it can improve on. I've been in part of discussions in adding a different perspective to the diversity team at CCL, the Latinos Action Team, reaching out to Latino conservatives. I think there's a really big opportunity right now with where politics are heading, and especially from what we've seen in past election. Latinos, which are assumed to be left-leaning, is actually increasingly not true. In fact, I would go out to say that many Latinos are centrist or conservative before they identify as liberal. And so I think typically before you'd have candidates that focus on immigration and Spanish-speaking media and would use that primarily to reach out to Latinos. Increasingly, I think we need to adjust to that as a group and obviously use those effective resources that we've seen, but also look at different issues that can also connect to them. And I believe climate change is one of those issues, especially in states where we're seeing a lot of climate change in places like Texas and California and Florida, where there are a lot of Latinos. I think like many Americans, Latinos are looking for an alternative. They're looking for something that will be bold and effective, that will reduce carbon emissions. That's carbon fee and dividend. And so I think if we're able to target not just Hispanics, not just Latinos, but Latino conservatives and educate them on a carbon fee and dividend, help them understand really what it is and the power it has combating climate change, they can reach out to their lawmakers in Congress and push them in passing a carbon fee and dividend. And I think that'll be powerful for not only people that are in Congress, that are always looking to hear that different perspective, also be where the political climate is going, but also to really hone in on why climate change is important and why it's time we start protecting our planet.
If you have good news you want to share on the show, email me, radio@citizensclimate.org. Thank you for joining me for episode 62 of Citizens Climate Radio. If you like what you hear and want to support the work we do, visit citizensclimateeducation.org. There you will learn how to make a tax-deductible contribution. Here at Citizens Climate Education, we have a solution that will greatly reduce pollution which leads to climate change. We believe that putting a price on carbon will make a huge difference. And we want to tell you more about it. Please visit cclusa.org/price on carbon. That's cclusa.org/price on carbon. Citizens Climate Radio is written and produced by me, Peterson Toscano. Other technical support from Ricky Bradley and Brett Cease. Social media assistance from Ashley Hunt Monterano, Plenary Winchester, and Steve Volpe. Moral support from Madeline Pera. And for helping make this episode possible, special thanks to Karina Ramirez, CCL's Diversity and Inclusion Director, and to Andrew Ierley, Conservative Outreach Director. The music on today's show comes from epidemicsound.com. Now, personally, I love it when you share episodes of Citizens Climate Radio with your friends on social media. I see those posts that you make. Thank you so much. Please feel free to share the show as often as you like. It's great getting new listeners all the time. I welcome your thoughts, suggestions, and messages, so feel free to email me about the show, radio@citizensclimate.org. That's radio@citizensclimate.org. And feel free to tweet at me directly, @P2Sun, the letter P, the number 2, S-O-N. You can find Citizens Climate Radio wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also listen at northernspiritradio.org. Join the discussion at our Facebook group page, facebook.com/group/citizensclimateradio. You can follow us on Twitter @CitizensCRadio. That's Citizens, the letter C, Radio, @CitizensCRadio. Visit citizensclimatelobby.org/blog to see our show notes and find links to our guests. Citizens Climate Radio is a project of Citizens Climate Education.